Professor Jonathan Janssen, Professor of Education at Stellenbosch University. He's the President of the Academy of Science of South Africa. Good morning to you. How are you? What a week.
Good morning. What a week indeed.
So how do we have these conversations? Do we have them now? Or do we wait until things calm down, but then we forget about them? How do we manage this?
Yeah, it's tough. Look, the country is quite, the people of this country are quite anxious and concerned and frustrated on the one hand, and then also very angry, you know, and at the lack of, at the slowness and unevenness of response on the part of government, and particularly the three major agencies that you need in this case, which is the police, the army, and the security services. So, and in the middle of all of that, there's the commentariat, you know, people like myself who are trying to make sense of what is going on. And we need to do that. We need to do that now. We need to try and figure out what exactly just happened, you know. And in the process of doing that, of course, we try to figure out who's to blame for all of this. And your point leading in is correct. This is, crime is not simply, you know, an inevitable outcome of poverty. In fact, I just read this morning that the CEO, how's this for irony? The CEO of Ubuntu Wealth Management was arrested for looting.
So no, there you go. No.
Yeah. It's true. Irony is dead, man.
Oh my word. I actually cannot even, you can't process that.
No, you can't. You can't. And he's not alone, of course. You saw people with Mercedes Benz driving up to a release and packing in. So, the issue here for me, the issue is not sort of, you know, are poor people more likely to commit crime? Because if that was the case, by the way, if that thesis held, then you have to explain a whole lot of other countries that A,
like India,
are as poor as us, and B, that compete with us in the Gini coefficient states, that is the inequality states, you know. So those are what I call lazy explanations, you know, for what's going on. And it's very clear that two things happened here. One is that the initial, conflagration, the initial sort of revolt has to do with Jacob Zuma being imprisoned. And that's why it's centered initially in, on KwaZulu-Natal. But later on, as you saw in the British riots of 2011, you know, what starts off as a local issue, the policeman handling a black man in Tottenham, quickly becomes a broad criminal, you know, sort of spin-off into suburbs and communities and so on, where everybody sort of says, this is our chance, okay, to loot, to steal, to break, to and so on. So I don't think those are political motivations, you know what I mean? Those are simply pure and simple that the criminals are let loose and they see an opportunity and they ransack the country.
So how do we have this I think what you're saying is that this conversation is a completely separate conversation, and that if we allow it to become about poverty, then we're going down the wrong road. Is that what you're saying?
Not a little bit, not quite. Look, what I am saying is that there are probably a lot of complexities at play here. For example, I do believe that, poverty, it plays a role. I do believe that the pandemic stress that has just kept people indoors and the frustration, I do believe that plays a role. Youth unemployment, as you know, in South Africa is completely off the charts. I'm sure that plays a role. But at root, you see, my kids won't do that, okay? I can guarantee you that. Why is that the case? Because like so many South Africans, they were brought up, their founding values are shaped by two institutions. The one is the home. And if your mother doesn't clap you, for stealing the toy of the neighbor's child, you will never know the difference between right and wrong, right? Then you have your school as an institution. This is a very fundamental institution in shaping values, you know. And if your school fails to also embed in you the difference between your money and other people's money, then you're really screwed. But then thirdly, our religious institutions, whether it's our synagogues, our mosques, our churches, and so on, they too shape us. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So
I think what we have here is a failure of institutions at the foundational end of learning. That is at the beginning of, because I can tell you, when you see behavior like this, you sort of say, who are the parents? You know,
right, absolutely.
Where did you learn these to steal, et cetera, et cetera. And you know what really breaks me, you know, is when you see a parent, a mother going in with the kids.
I know. As you were saying that, I was thinking those are the scenes that devastated me the most. You know, it's like if you go to a casino and you see people with their kids there at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know,
exactly.
It's that type of a feeling.
Yeah. So I'm saying that in the short term, yes, we must deal with the criminals, find them, arrest them, make sure that the rule of law applies. That's in the short term. In the long term, we must ask ourselves, how did we get here?
Yeah. And where do we go from here?
And where do we go from here? Yeah. You know, and, you know, unfortunately, I mean, if I may just shift this a little bit, unfortunately,
sure.
We don't have the Nelson Mandelas, you know, the leaders that you can trust to. So I was thinking the other day, you know, what would Nelson Mandela do in this situation since we're celebrating
Mandela Day?
And it was really clear to me, first of all, he would respect the rule of law. Do you remember that Nelson Mandela actually went to court when a frivolous lawsuit was brought against him by Louis Late from Blue Bulls Rugby? I don't know if you remember that. And everybody said to him, why do you, this guy is a moron, you know, and so on. He's trying to embarrass you. But because he respected the courts, he respected the law. So the first thing I learned from Nelson Mandela in this crisis is respect. A little bit more. The second thing I learned from him is that when there's a crisis, you call your people to come. I don't know how old you are, but you know, when Chris Hani was shot, a lot of us thought that's it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was it.
Yeah.
And he called the country together, and guess what? He points to other people. He points to a white woman. a black hero just died, right? He points to a white woman as signaling the values, the goodness of our people, the person who pointed him out, you know, et cetera. And the third thing that he did, you know, is always give us a sense that, that you must stand outside of the crowd. You know, a lot of this is crowd behavior.
Such an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah. And he, as you know, when the chips were down, even with the Rugby World Cup, most people told him not to go onto that field. He stood alone. He went out because for him, there was a bigger picture here that was at play. So, you know, I say to people, I've asked people to just call me on my Facebook page, and I sent my email and said, give me a call. If you just want to talk, you know.
Right.
Because right now people are really sickening. They're struggling in our country.
Have we seen any positive leadership looking across the South African political landscape over the last week? The people of South Africa, I think, have done well. But leadership wise?
Not in the political, among the political elites, as you correctly say, you know. I mean, they've been absolutely pathetic. You know, from the president to Ayanda Lordlu. I mean, every time they speak, they make matters worse, you know. Yeah. And then you see a truck loaded with bread, you know, that some of our Muslim brothers have just driven these trucks, you know,
amazing.
And dropped off bread. You've seen communities cut off a neighborhood and say, you're not going to destroy the house of my neighbor. You see, even taxi drivers. I mean, we normally talk.
I know. What an upside down world where we're so grateful. We're in love with the taxi industry all of a sudden.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think when the chips are down, my faith lies more in the people of South Africa than in its government, to be honest.
I think that is absolutely incredible. We do need to leave it there. Are you feeling a little, before I let you go, are you feeling a bit more hopeful today than you were, let's say, on Monday or Tuesday?
No. I was hopeful on Monday and Tuesday. I was hopeful last week. I think of the Boer War, you know, 1910. You know, this country could have gone either way. There was peace, you know. Think of my generation thought apartheid would never end in our
country.
It did, you know. I'm quite convinced we get out of this quickly. My bigger problem, as I wrote in the Times the other day, is would we have learned the lessons from what just happened? That's what worries me. Because you can't just reset.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What has changed? What is our learning?